Well, good afternoon, everybody. This is the final presentation I'll be doing at Holden Village, and hopefully it serves to wrap up a lot of little loose ends, discussions we've had. I tweaked it a little bit according to things you've brought up this week, and it was fun for me to prepare this for you. In fact, the last slide, I think, is a little bit about life after Holden, because I thought, you know, there's many of you that might need a little, you know, something to help you ease into normal society, since it's quite a bit different than up here. And one thing I want to mention, too, is that for Vern and I both to be up here, you know, in my original study, there were 500 families, all TB-free, all very much. We found such similarities as we went through these 100 question demographics. And I remember thinking, well, it'd be kind of fun to get them all together, you know, just sort of talk. And we've never, ever been in a place where there was even ever more than one family who was much like that. And here we're coming up to Holden Village, everybody has some similarities. So that's been a lot of fun to laugh about some of the hilarity. Like, I don't know if this happened to some of you guys, but you know, people know you don't have a TV and they try to give you one. They think you can afford one, or they say, well, here's a good sale going on somewhere. It's like, but anyway. So we'll just start here again. I'll let this kind of drive the things I'm going to talk about. There's a few props I have today. I want to remember to mention my book at the end. There's some previews on it here, and I can give it to you guys at a really killer discount and all that. And if you're interested, I can just send a bunch up to Holden or one up to Holden or wherever you are. So I forgot to say that when I first talked about it, but I'd sure like to do that. I have a few at home. So. But anyway, doing more and watching less. Tips to a more fulfilling life with less screen time. So, anyway, this was a fun quote that I actually was just waiting over in the dining hall, and Oprah magazine was there. It was an old Oprah magazine, and I just turned to this article on clutter, and I thought, this just seemed a very poignant quote for what we're talking about, too. It's not just about offloading stuff. In other words, it's not just about, you know, getting rid of TV. It's about what flows in the absence of that stuff. And I love that quote. There's many things we've talked about this week that is kind of getting rid of certain parts of things maybe you're not real happy with, and imagine what's going to flow in. And I thought, you know, I've learned now it's the Hobbit House. You know, we saw that the very first day we were here, and I went, oh my gosh, I love this. And in the yearbook, some of the kids were in the top level, and one says, I think we can get 10 people in here. I mean, that just, oh, I just loved seeing it. And
I'm not one of them.
So, yeah, I know. I looked in there just before here, too. I go, 10 people? I don't know. But just some of the beauty around here are things that happen that flow in the absence of screen time. And seeing Lori and Mary out there, you know, Lori teaching many people to knit, I'm sure, but that Mary's been wearing her beautiful red scarf around here. And that was just fun. Things that happen in the absence of the screen time. So why reduce screens? The average American, again, spends more time watching TV than anything else except for sleeping. More than 1 or 2 hours a day of TV watching is linked to interest in school and poor grades. TV ads, of course, promote unhealthy foods. And this is something, and thanks to Darryl, you know, I knew what the statistics were, but I didn't know the details or the basis. And I wanted to share some of this with you today about the fact that TV does portray a very violent society 100 times more violent than it really is. And this is a 2013 article on Christian Science Monitor, which is a very reputable news source, called Why is America Safer Now? And it does say, I'm just going to summarize quickly, but I have a couple copies if anybody wants it. In the past 20 years, the murder rate in the U.S. has dropped by almost half, from 9.8 per 100,000 people in 91 to 5 in 2009. Robberies down 10% in 2010 from the year before, and 8% from 2009. The declines are not just a blip, say criminologists, rather they are the result of a host of changes that have fundamentally reversed the high crime trends of the 80s. And there were basically four big reasons: increased incarceration, including longer sentences, improved law enforcement strategies, computer analysis, innovative technology, the waning of crack cocaine epidemics that soared from 84 to 90, and the grain of America characterized by the fastest growing segment of the U.S. population is baby boomers passing the age of 50. But this is the most important paragraph that I just went, wow, I have to bring this to you guys today. The data point to a persistent perception gap among Americans. Despite strong evidence of crime dropping over recent decades, the public sees the reverse. Recent Gallup polls have found that citizens overwhelmingly feel crime is growing, even though it's not. This is because the growth of crime shows and the way TV spotlights the emotional. One case of a random horrific shooting shown repeatedly on TV has more visceral effect than all the statistics printed in a newspaper. And I thought, wow, I mean, I didn't even realize it was this much had dropped, you know, because I'm not even exposed to a lot of the media that many people are. And I thought, well, I heard it's dropping, but it doesn't seem like it, you know. So that was something I wanted to bring to you today.
But there's a difference between crime and violence too.
This is violent. This is interpreted as violent crime. And in fact, on the site there were about 12 different ways of interpreting it that were all showed a significant decline, a 40-year low, you know, this and that. Was FBI statistics, CNN statistics, or the CS Monitor. Look it up, because it was very interesting to read all that.
So,
yeah.
Do you have any statistics about the percentage of shows in the primetime viewing slot that are like crime shows, police show, I mean, you know, CSI, everything, and
it's basically
Law and Order and Breaking Bad.
Right. It's the top 10 shows are all on that genre. And I don't know if you were mentioned, or yesterday we said it kind of quickly. I remember reading something about the top 10 shows 30 years ago, where all these sitcoms and stand-up and Dick Van Dyke and Carol Burnett. And now it's CSI and crime. So who knows? Cart before the, you know what I'm saying? We don't know what happened, but you're definitely, the statistics show those are the top 10 shows today.
But you don't have a statistic of the battle over against the other. Okay.
I've just seen lists where it's the top viewed shows versus the top viewed 30 years ago. And they were all on that same line. But anyway, food for thought. I hope some of this just makes you want to dig a little deeper and find out more about it. These top 10 ways of reducing TV watching in your home are put out by the WABAM, that's the University of Washington, ActiveBodyActiveMind.org, and I worked with them on this grant. And it's funny, when I was getting stuff for this session, I was looking through this list and I thought, I'm kind of familiar about that. I didn't realize that was my list to give to them in the grant thing, but it's really great that they're using it as a nice, I'm recognized and, you know, when you dig down into the writers and stuff. But that, I think I put on the back of one of your handouts, even in a way that if you wanted to make little copies of it and just give cards out to people as kind of inspiration, leave them around the house, leave them around people that you wish knew a little bit more about reducing screens. So you can read those at your own leisure, but there's some good ones. They're very simple. I think the biggest thing is just put it behind closed doors. Make a nice armoire, the door shuts, put it in the basement. Make yourself have to work a little bit to get to it. And I have to think of this one great Far Side comic that I saw years ago. I wish I could find it now. But it showed cave people all sitting on the ground, you know, about six little kids and the mother that are sitting on the ground cross-legged. There's a big white stone, and they're all looking at it. And it says, what cave people did before television. Oh, gosh. You know, we need to think about that sometimes.
I like that one, using TV as a punishment. Oh. You make the kids watch the TV.
So minimize TV, maximize health. And as you'll know as I get through here, I've never have been a kill your TV person, because it's a wonderful medium. But we do have to remember, what are we not doing when we're watching so much? So there's a lot of great, again, websites all over the place. Many different health websites, nice little flyers, little tips for you from pediatricians. You know, have one or two TV-free days each week, for example. Do not use TV for rewards or punishments, because I'm a big believer in that. Let the kids be bored for a while. You know, if you can stand 20 minutes of whining, they will find something to do. No TVs in bedrooms at all. No TV for kids less than two. Limit TV video games to 1 to 2 hours a day. Monitor the shows children are watching. There's one quote on here. I used to use TV as a babysitter while I cleaned. Now my house is not as clean, but I don't feel so guilty. Sometimes it's hard because I'm so tired when I get home from work, but playing with my kids relaxes me more than watching TV. I really didn't like the week we had no TV, except I noticed my grades went up and I was in a good mood all week. Stuff like that happens. I remember one woman saying she was so into an Oprah show and her infant was right there and her infant was crying and she's like, quiet, I'm watching this. And it was just a big epiphany that she goes, oh my gosh, I really cared more about Oprah at that moment than my kid.
And Oprah's talking about family values.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, that's the irony.
Oh, the other one, I gotta tell you this one. This was during the Gulf War, and a woman in a military family, her husband was a helicopter pilot. And I don't know if you all remember the Gulf War, but Vern and I actually borrowed a TV from the university because we just felt you just had to do that. It was the funniest thing for us. This was way before this research, but we brought it home, and I still remember there was a certain certain news segment that showed a helicopter getting blown out of the sky and falling into the ocean of water, and this little three-year-old's dad was a helicopter pilot, and this mom said the three-year-old, every time that would come on, it was repeatedly, just like when the Twin Towers fell, and she, every time she saw that, she thought her dad was in that helicopter. Her dad was safe. But the mother took the TV and, you know, pretty middle, lower class income family, took that TV and threw it in the dumpster from a second floor building, wrote the whole story about doing that. And it was just like, whoa. So you did get a lot of stories like that in the study. Mm-hmm. Here's the brochure you've got. Again, this is Active Bodies, Active Minds. And it's just a fun little, very simple, you know, easy to look at, easy to pass on to other people. And it's on their website. If ever you're in a group where you think it'd be an interesting source of conversation, you could just, it's just a nice PDF you could make out. But I say, here's the real deal. The screens steal time. And you know, you can't get that back. I mentioned this the first day, loss of 14 and a half years of your life. If you watch that, you know, the basic 4.5 hours a day from birth to age 65. Loss of social capital. You're all familiar with the Robert Putnam social capital term, and he and I actually got to present together on the same area. He on his book, Bowling Alone, which probably many of you have heard of, but his big thing is social capital. That's knowing your neighbors, watching out for their yards, having picnics as neighborhoods, you know, going to ice cream socials, you know, people in PTO or PTA and Rotary clubs, you know, that drop, you know, of social service clubs is dramatically dropping in the last 30 years. And he said there are actually more people bowling, but they're bowling alone. They're just not in groups anymore. So he's a huge proponent on getting rid of or reducing screens, because he's seen that's very much positively correlated with what's happening with social groups. And loss of health. So again, this is a slide from Monday, just to reiterate, reading, fantasy play, reading, talking, going outside was huge, community service big, meaningful conversation. And again, the list of all these things that there were more time for. Everybody does these, but simply more time if you're television free. And here's what I want to focus on today. There's several things I have for you. that are just ideas, what I'll say, to fight spectatoritis. And spectatoritis is a term that an old philosopher named J.B. Nash used in the 50s. And he would turn over in his grave if he knew the level of screen time today, because even back then he was saying, oh man, we got to do something about this. But a fact sheet on the effects of TV is, I think, I know it's what turned me on to thinking, I better get involved. Again, a few things that you learn about the actual amount that it's watched and what is ignored because people are so focused on television. So fact sheets are readily available at the WABAN website and the commercialfreechildhood.org. Really nice PDF files that you can copy off, and I read just some of those yesterday. So that's number one, educate yourself a bit. All of us, the things about the violence that it's depicted in the media is so much worse than it actually is news to many of us. Try the 20 favorite things exercise. If there was time, I'd love to do this. This would be a really fun session. But go ahead and pull that worksheet that I handed you, and let me walk you through it real briefly. I think it's the green one?
Yeah.
I've done this for, oh my gosh, my entire career, 37 years, with students. And it's so much fun to do. And you can, if you don't have, do it with a spouse, a significant other, do it with family, do it with a church youth group or a group up here. But get people talking about how much they love to do certain things and have them do this list. And then I usually tell them to kind of cover up all those criteria, but have them just simply write down their 20 favorite things to do. And then look back at them and fill out, how many things take planning, how many things cost more than $5, how many things do you do alone, do you do with others, how many things will you do when you're 65, how many things are new in the last 5 years, et cetera, et cetera. And then have some discussion about it, it's always so fun because everybody loves to think about those things they love to do. So that's my first thing for fighting against too much screen time is first get a record of what you love to do. And then at the top I say take this on your refrigerator or ask yourself questions like, how many of these things have I done in the last week? Or in the last 6 months. I remember doing this exercise as an undergrad, or actually I must have been a grad student because I'd climbed Mount Hood once anyway in my life, and it had been years before, and I put on my list of 20 favorite things, climb Mount Hood. Well, I hadn't climbed Mount Hood for 4 or 5 years. And it was this, I said, wow, only 20 things. I better either do it more or get it off my list. Because you should be able to do those things on your list, I'd say, at least every year. So I kind of made a commitment, and I started climbing Mount Hood more. It was a big deal for me, and when my kids turned 15, and I think when my Volkswagen convertible was 20 years old, was the first time I climbed, and I invited Vern to go with me. So I had these momentous occasions in my life where I decided to climb Mount Hood. So it made me think, if it's on my list, I better do it. So do that same thing. Do this maybe later this week.
That'd be a great extra session.
Yeah, I know. It would have been a very fun one to do. In fact, there's a lot of fun ones that we do. But this was one of them. So that's 20 favorite things. Now the other favorite thing that I use in all my teaching, that in fact, Michael, it is the only assignment in my life that students actually ask to do again. Which you know how unusual that is. So the 20 favorite things is pretty cut and dry. You've got the idea in front of you. I'm going to show you a template for the time budget in a minute. But it's simply students keeping track of their life for 6 days. And 1 hour segments, and they can put any category you want, but I typically used school, work, maintenance, or leisure. And the maintenance was brushing your teeth, sleeping, driving to work, etc. And then they had to categorize it a little bit more because it was this class we used some other criteria in. But then discuss it with friends, family, colleagues, neighbors, a time budget. And again, I'll show you a template in a minute. The other one, which could be wonderful is to do a one-week recess, and you do have that copy, right? Go ahead and pull that one. That's the orange one, orangey one. This one has been very successful and hilarious because I have students keep the withdrawal symptoms on the back. And I should have brought a few to read because I mean, they are, it's pretty funny. And especially the first 2 days, they're miserable. You know, they think the entire world is just leaving them behind. By the third or fourth day, they're so into it. By the end, and this is a lot of 20-something college students that say, oh my gosh, I read 3 books. I haven't read a book since I was a sophomore in high school, or you know, that kind of thing, that they talked more, they made their roommates do it, they bring people along on board. So the 7 days live, I call it, is very fun exercise to do. So you've got the whole shebang of what.
Are you still talking specifically of TV?
Screen.
Not the iPads, not the...
We're trying screens on this one.
Yeah, okay.
I know, and it's a push. And I mean, my daughter and I text a dozen times a day, and it's our way, you know, she's across the country in college and all
so
that.
So the screen free is the thing.
Yeah.
So your phones or whatever.
Right. And so I find it best to give students a week warning. And it's funny how seriously some will take it, and they'll contact their friends and they'll say, we're gonna talk this week. We talk on the phone, of course, any of that. But just not text, and that's very hard. It's really hard for me. Every time this assignment's coming up, I'm going, oh man, I gotta do it too. But it's good. I think it's just a good exercise, and it's food for thought. It's great discussion material, and it makes you think, wow, I have really gotten, you know, attached to that, maybe a little too much. So that's another one. And 30 Days Live, I want to mention briefly, is a program I did in 03, 05, and 07, and then a pilot in 09 with University of Washington. And it's because of a teacher, because I did the 7-day turnoff in lots of classrooms, and we called Buried the TV with Books, and all these kids read and put slips of paper all over these TVs all over the school. It's pretty fun. And one teacher says, we should try it for a month. And I said, oh, you gotta be kidding me. And this was a few years ago, but I said, thinking I'd get half a dozen kids left on that. Well, it was unbelievably successful.
And what age group?
It was 4th, 5th, and 6th graders. Mm. And I'll show you some stats on that in a minute, but the real key on this is it happened in a classroom. And you had the teacher on board. And if you didn't have those two things, good luck. It's going to be tough. But these kids were just this little, I'm going to talk about it in a minute, but let me show you while I'm on. This was one of the little boards put up in the room, and all the little stickers were every day they went. And these kids policed themselves like nobody's business. One little kid had come in and try to put a sticker on, and some kid would catch him in the act and say, I know you watched this last night. And they were just, it was funny how seriously they took it. And some of this data is also up here. It was a poster presentation done called Nutritional and Physical Activity Change During TV Screen Withdrawal for 130 Children, called 30 Days Live. So
it'd be interesting to see what the kids' parents thought of this program.
Oh no!
Did you send out a survey to see what their experience was?
Yes,
that's interesting.
And what is real interesting is these little 10-year-olds, 10, 11-year-olds, took it so seriously that we heard some very sad things, like the parents refused to do it, and they all watched eat dinner in front of TV. So this little kid would take his plate, walk by the dinner and go sit by himself and eat his dinner for a month. I mean, you just, and that, sometimes that, parents
that
jump.
Heartbreaking.
I know, it is. Sometimes parents did jump on board, and we encouraged all parents, gave them ideas, resources, all that. But there were a few that just wanted nothing to do with it. But anyway, I'll give you a little bit of details on that now, because it's pretty fun. So there's your 20 things I love to do. And the challenge for that would be, if you had to keep track of your life in hours for the next week, what would it reveal about you? Are you really living, or are you just pumping blood? So
Is that a Shel Silverstein?
Shel Silverstein.
Yeah, I think that's a Shel Silverstein poem.
Where the little kid turns into a, there was a tale of an outlet. And there's your time for life. So it's just a simple form. You know, I thought of making copies, but it's not. It's something you can do it on Excel, do it on your computer. That could be one of the valuable uses of screens. Because I usually tell students important things for work, obviously. You have to use screens. And it's good. Screens are wonderful in that respect. But this is the leisure part of your life, you know, when you don't have to have a screen to ask yourself. So that's kind of what a time budget could look like. The 7 days live you've got in front of you, so you see copies of that. So here was 30 days live. And here's a few things we found out about that. 77% of the kids lasted 30 days. 80% predicted failure, but still made it. So it was easier than they thought. And this was over and over and over again for the 7 days live, 30 days live. If you ask the group, if I asked a group of 50, you know, 20-year-olds, if they can do it, 80% at least would say, are you kidding? I can't last 2 hours, let alone 7 days. So, but then they get challenged a little bit, and anyway, and it's always easier than they think. So that's a good thing to carry.
I think buy-in with the group is the ticket.
Absolutely.
Buy-in with the group so that other people are doing it, you can talk about it. That's how diets and exercise programs and everything else work.
Very right. And here are a few other things. They spent more time with pets, friends, siblings, and parents. The paper did a big story on it once. There was these two little girls on the cover, both holding their guinea pigs. So the pets really benefited during the 30 days live because, you know, they get so bored, they, poor thing, otherwise they don't. But they went outside more, they did homework, they ate together, slept more, exercised in bed, and were in better moods. The teachers loved 30 days live. And they especially loved it when it was offered in the spring, kind of during testing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, lots of things going on then. So if you ever wanted to promote this in your school district, you'll get buy-in with teachers for sure. They planted gardens, did crafts, rode scooters, bikes, reorganized rooms, discovered long-lost toys, cleaned closets, and drew cartoons. Funny story is, one sixth grade class, I happened to be in the back of the class the day they had started. That was their first TV-free day. And the teacher spent just 5 minutes saying, what did you kids do today? You know, the kids' arms shoot up. And one says, I rode my scooter. And I'm back there, and these two little boys near me look at each other, and one says, I know I have a scooter. I don't know where it is, but I know I have a scooter. So they found things. They've been abandoned forever, and I can guarantee, you know, this was a few years ago. Imagine now, you know, things kids have in their closets, old Christmas presents, things they just got distracted from and didn't do again. Mm. One really cool thing was a lot of them planted gardens, and then in the fall when the school year started again, they were harvesting from the gardens they planted in the spring. So lots of great environmental kind of lessons and things can happen with this. So remember, you know, a big point back from the earlier study, 80% of TV-free families felt their marriages were stronger, 70% felt their kids got along better, and nearly 9 in 10 said they'd never regretted their decision. Now here's a 1958 convention of radio television.
Oh, wow.
Yes. This instrument can teach, it can illuminate, and yes, it can even inspire. But it can do so only to the extent that humans are determined to use it to those ends. Otherwise, it is merely wires and lights in a box. So here's my final comments for all of you before we can have some discussion. Don't treat TV or screens as forbidden fruit. You know, people ask me that when I did the study. Well, what do you do with your kids when they're walking in a mall and there's a TV showing in the room? I go, we watch it, you know. Or they say, what do you do when your kid goes to other people's kids' homes? I go, it's okay. You know, it's not, don't get so radical about it. You'll find eventually that by you making those limitations at home, that's huge. mean, I think of all of you at Holden. You're here, you don't have a choice in that. And that's going to significantly affect you when you go back, I feel. It's got to be there to remind you of maybe some things you're not doing enough of or missing. The other thing is simply be an example for others. And it's kind of hard to talk to people about this subject. As you know, it's a very personal choice how people spend their life. There's a few topics in this world that we just kind of feel, you know, it's my choice, my life, and I'm going to live it that way. And if they ask you about it, obviously, you can say, but it's a little, I don't really encourage people to go out and start, you know, pushing that way. I say, embrace the multitude of recreation and leisure opportunities around you. There are so many things to do. Check your 20 favorite thing list, you know, for a starter. And then I have to read you something. My favorite Mary Oliver poem. The Summer Day. You've probably heard it before. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean, the one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who's moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is, but I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down into the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I've been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? So tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? And finally, consider this. When you pass through those pearly gates at the end of your life, are you going to wish you would have spent more time at screens? So that's kind of where I'm ending. I have some resources here for sure for you, but I had to share this also. This is the story of Holden Village, The Surprising Gift by Charles Lutz, that you're probably very familiar with. But I just happened to open it, and I turned to the section on the Science and Technology Committee, who one of my great respected individuals, Dr. Bustad, was on this board. And you know what their biggest, what they had tried out? They had tried experimenting with carrier pigeons for communication with operations at 25 Mile Creek and Lucerne. Eventually abandoned because Martins broke into the pigeon house 2 years in a row and dined on the partly trained pigeons. That's kind of a laugh there. Anyway, how about comments? Can I just ask some of you in the few minutes we have left, how does being at Holden affect you after you go back home? What are your screen habits when you're...
I watch everything that I recorded while I was gone.
Okay. So you have a bit of a screen binge.
Yeah, okay. And it's pretty much ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, none of it is any good.
Yeah.
And then I wonder why I recorded it. But, I do watch stupid shows. What I find interesting is that when I'm here, I don't particularly miss it at all. And that most of us, I think, would say that when we knew we were going to live here, we tried to think of all the ways to keep ourselves occupied, knowing that we were going to be without phones or have fast computer access or screens or whatever. And that we find that we don't do most of the activities we brought with us because we're too busy.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. That's very good. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good, that would be, I mean, everybody who comes, I'm assuming, they realize how remote this is, right? So you have a little, this warning of how to prepare.
Well, and I've only been here a week and a half, and it was really hard the first few days because I was so aware of how I was used to quick communication with my children who don't communicate via letter writing or, I mean, it was a phone call or a text or a Facebook message, that's how we connected. So I really felt like I went through withdrawals. I called it my cacophony of connection was broken. And now I feel like I'm doing okay, or better, I feel like I'm doing better. And then I have to let go of wanting to connect with them because we just might not. I can write them letters and we'll see if they write.
Are you planning to do that?
Oh, yeah.
It might be interesting when once they receive a letter, which is rare for anybody nowadays. Who knows?
Yeah.
I know our daughter was in Australia for 6 months doing the exchange and really got to writing letters more than ever before, and had a bunch of her friends writing letters, and we all called them antiques, you know, because people don't do it anymore. Interesting thing to happen. How about the rest of you? What are some of your Do you go on withdrawals here, or set yourself up for it, or what's?
I mean, if anything, I don't really go through withdrawals, but I've become more judgmental of those the outside world who do have a lot of screen time. Like, when I go to my brother's house, it's just like walking into an electronics store for me. I mean, in a way, it's kind of gone off balance in the other direction. I'm so used to it not being there that I don't like it being there.
Yeah.
My parents have two 54-inch screens, one in the living room, one in the dining room, and then they've got like a 40-inch screen in their bedroom. And you can, in fact, you can't hardly watch the other TV if they're watching one of them because they're both a little getting hard of hearing. So it's like, I'm like, But it's also easy to fall into that. Like they have it on while they don't. I mean, she has it on while she's cooking. She has it on while they're eating dinner. They just are. Mm-hmm. It's like that Shel Silverstein picture.
Wow.
Totally like that.
Lovely.
And if that is somehow not enough, they also each have iPads and iPhones. And I'll tell you what, it's funny. My dad's 79 years old.
Oh,
he hasn't figured out the iPads and the iPhones as much. My stepmom is 14 years younger, but she is like always within arm's reach of an electronic device 24/7. It's just funny.
Oh my goodness. And they watch the same shows?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They leave like when you get up and like I stay with them now for the first time in my adult life. I no longer have a home to go back to because I've sublet my house to my daughter and three college kids. But so now I stay in their guest room and it's just so strange.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, that's the generation that I was saying this yesterday. They kind of have a hard time if our generation wants to turn it off because they were raised, that TV was a very good thing, and you're going to be lost.
But
that.
It's Good Morning America, then the Today Show, and I don't know what comes on after that. But then they also are, you know, when they're not watching TV, they're golfing or doing other things.
Oh, yeah.
So they do have, you know, they do get out. But,
But
yeah, there's when they're home, TVs are all on. It's bizarre.
Yeah.
Well, I have the radio on the whole time when I'm at home, too. So, I live alone, and so I listen to the radio a lot when things are on PBS and so.
Right.
Or whatever it is, NPR.
You know, one section in my book, I asked a whole lot of my really heavy-duty TV watching friends, say it generated a list of 10 questions to ask a gymnasium full of television-free people. Things like, when my husband gets home from work, he's just got to veg out for 2 hours, you know, I don't know how to give it. And things like, I want to get dinner ready, but I have two preschoolers and I, you know, can't get it done. Or things like, I sit down to watch a half an hour show at night and 4 hours later I get up. So real typical scenarios. And one section in the appendix of the book is all the answers of these TV-free families, which was such a fun chapter to write because you got some pretty hilarious answers. One I remember said, take where the television was and put a big block of nice maple wooden building blocks. And one who's, to answer the one about the husband, you know, who came home had to watch his TV. One person says, just curl up next to him with a feathered negligee on it. And then you get things like having a big container of rice with little objects hidden in it. Put it on your counter if your child is large enough to support themselves sitting up and let them play. And then give them all these jobs, setting the table. You know, get the kids right in there with you. So there were some very, very insightful, helpful, fun questions on that of how to handle these different instances in your life. Another thing on the book, it's got the actual original 100-question survey, and then it's got statistics on everything if you're interested. That's another appendix in that in the book. And that's the little brochure around. It was like $17.95, which, you know, I can sell them for $10. And if anybody's interested, I'll put in postage on that too, so I'd be happy to send you one if you wanted to learn more about the topic.
I think you could put that in the bookstore.
Yeah, I was thinking you put it in the bookstore.
Sure. Yeah. I can mail it to you. Just let me know after how many you'd like or anything. So other than that, I think we're right on time. So thank you for coming. And it was really fun to be with a lot of screen-free people for a while, I tell you.
Well, I thought you said ice cream-free people.
And ice cream, right, Sarah?